So today we have Jesse O'Hane, CEO of Doctegrity Telemedicine, yes. Correct?
Yep.
So Jesse, you have a very extensive work history. I'm super excited to go more in depth into it.
Yeah.
But I would like for you to introduce yourself and kind of go into that a little bit. And
sure. Yeah, I'm Jesse O'Hane, and my journey is actually not in specific healthcare, but more to the recruiting world. So I started off in the recruiting world at the ripe age of 17 years old.
Wow.
All my friends were getting these part-time jobs, you know, retail, whatever it was. And at the time, the cool thing to do was, get a job at a call center. So I saw an ad in the old school newspaper, classified ad, said, telemarketing, no sales, $7 an hour. Done. So that was my first foray into recruiting. It was a small engineering recruiting firm back in Toronto, Canada, where I'm from. And after college, went full-time as a recruiter, started working for a company full-time, all in the engineering, both consulting and manufacturing engineering. There's a lot of manufacturing engineering in Canada and also a lot of architecture as well. So spent a number of years doing that, probably about 4 or 5 years. Then I left Toronto, Canada, and moved to New York City. I ran the IT talent acquisition team for Merrill Lynch. Did that for a couple of years. Then moved out to the West Coast and ran contract labor, talent acquisition, and recruiting for a little company called Walt Disney. Did that for a few years. Then I left to join Adecco, which is the world's largest staffing company. And I ran the recruiting for the Western U.S. for Adecco, the engineering, IT, medical, and scientific. And then my boss, who I love, left. She was my mentor for many years. And she became president of a large recruiting and defense contractor in Philadelphia, made me an offer to move. So I did. Spent 4 years there. And when Obama got reelected for his second term, his passion was really to fix healthcare. And I don't think it'll ever be fixed, but in any case, but it was the first foray into kind of fixing healthcare. And I thought, you know, this is the world is shifting. They're moving away from the war efforts and we really need to focus on healthcare. So I said, I too need to focus on healthcare. And I was fortunate to have two sisters who were doctors. And, so that kind of helped me quite a bit. And I left to join a company called Schumacher. And I joined them as a 36-year-old senior vice president of this company that I really knew nothing about in Lafayette, Louisiana, middle of nowhere, moving down from Philly. And I was there for, I told them, I said, I'll give you a year here, then you got to let me move. And my choices were Houston, Dallas, or Atlanta. And I picked Dallas for a number of reasons. Hopefully we'll get to talk about those. But picked Dallas and then left Schumacher to do some consulting and then later to start Doctegrity. So that's kind of a quick rundown of my kind of career history, but I've been in Dallas for about 9 years now. So,
Wow. Very extensive. That's actually a lot more than I thought, because I'm here thinking like, okay, recruiter, you know, you work for a few companies for a few years and you're good, but you have a very vast sort of diverse, you know, set of tools that you've like for recruiting, for engineering, for, you know, I think you even talked about IT and, you know, all these different things. And that's it kind of like begs the question for me is, you know, not being an expert in an industry, right? Like you didn't go into this with a, you know, especially starting Doctegrity, for example, you know, you have your two sisters who are doctors, you have, you know, Obama wanting to make healthcare better, but there was no medical
right.
history. You didn't go to school for, you know, medicine. You didn't go to school for IT. You know, you didn't go to school for those things. So that's kind of very interesting is that, you know, you didn't have experience necessarily in those things. So would you say that, I guess in my mind, I'm like, okay, a recruiter is looking for a recruiter for a company. What is the recruiter looking for in you? And like, how do they know you're going to hire the people that we need for our company? You know, like, how does that kind of...
Grace, I have a history degree. I got like nowhere. I mean, like, it was just, you know, and I kind of fell into it. I had a big passion for film. That was kind of the first thing I wanted to do was kind of get the film. And back in Toronto, Canada, Toronto is a huge, huge film industry. And then my second year, I said, well, I'm not really cut out for film, but I love fine arts. So I kind of followed my... I have a third sister who is extensive background in music, and she actually went back to college to do her master's in music when I was in college. So even though she's, I won't say the number, but a few years, several years older than me, we actually went to college together, which was kind of nice. So I was really focused on music my second year. I was like, okay, don't know how I'm going to make money from this. So I'm going to, you know, I just wanted to graduate and kind of get back out there. And I was still working as a recruiter, you know, through this whole process. So I just knew I just wanted to kind of get on with life. And I knew that there was nothing specifically, obviously, like in architecture, you go to school to learn the trade, to learn that craft. Yes. There's not much craft when it comes to history or anything. So it's just, you just know you want to kind of do something else or whatever. Maybe you could lead to law school, but you're right. How do you recruit recruiters? And that's definitely a big thing too. So because I started when I was 17, I'm old school enough to really know and have really learned. I was very fortunate to learn like how you recruit somebody for a job, because if you don't recruit them the right way, you're just trying to fill a position, they won't stay there. And then the company's not happy, the candidate who you found, the place in that job isn't happy. So I'm old school enough to kind of do it the old way, but at the same time, through the years, I mean, technology has really, really impacted the recruiting world as well. So you kind of had to keep up with the trends as well. So it's not just to being able to understand like what somebody's interested in, their passions, but what are they good at? You know, is it a job? Is it a career? Is this something they want to do? They want to collect a paycheck, or are they, you know, they have a passion for it. So that was very big to really understand, you know, what someone's looking for. That was big for me to really learn that. And then as time went on, there's a number of different tools that you would use to either find candidates, to source them. But back in the day, we'd even call that headhunting, where you're finding a specific person for a specific job, maybe even from a specific company that people just kind of don't do anymore. Mm-hmm. And like when people used to call during lunchtime, when like maybe the receptionist was away at lunch and the backup person, you'd ask who the, you know, engineering manager is or the architectural designer for this project was, so you can go talk to them and say, actually, I'm a recruiter and I'd love to talk to you about this. Here's my number, call me when you get home. But that's a very old school way of doing it, versus now we could just find their cell phone number and text them and say, hey, I have this opportunity, call me when you get a chance. So it's a little bit different. So yeah, definitely I think that you really have to understand people. One of the best recruiters I ever worked with was a former bartender. And because they had the gift of the gab, they could talk to people. They understood kind of what people were all about. And then it's not just recruiting anybody. Like being in engineering and architecture, I wanted to really understand what these people did. Like, what did you do on a daily basis? So we would many times do site visits and go out to, for example, I did a large project with University of Toronto, and their buildings are older. So it was a large architectural, like asbestos abatement project. Mm-hmm. And I went down, I was like, well, can I see the building and what kind of tools are they going to be using? Like, what does the engineering department look like? So you can kind of understand a little bit more, like what's the environment that you're going to recruit someone to go sit in there? Is it going to be, you know, they're just in a little queue by themselves, not talking to anyone? Is it a collaborative environment? So there's a lot more that goes into that. So I was very passionate about, you know, I'd never taken an engineering course prior to that. I later did a Six Sigma black belt with what was kind of more under engineering or lean engineering, but you know, but that was about it. But I had no experience, no exposure. What's AutoCAD? No idea. What's, you know, MicroStation? Who knows? You know, so all these things were new for me, but I had to learn them so I could find the right people. So that's big.
That's huge. Yeah. Finding the right person for the job. And I think it's really neat that even as a recruiter, not having any work experience in those things, you were interested enough to want to go to the site, want to figure out what are the tools, what do they do, how are they doing this kind of thing. And that's really what, finding the right person that fits this, are they able to do the job well and can they do it? And it's, I guess it's just beyond just, do they have the skill sets? Can they do this? Even with your story, you know, you starting off and looking for an ad in the paper, You didn't, like, you weren't just like, well, I guess I'll just find a job and whatever and, like, just do whatever. But you worked really hard to do the job and to do it well and to learn the craft. But at the same time, I think that, you know, you didn't necessarily have to have a degree. Yep. And that you didn't need to be an expert in it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a course for everything nowadays. And yeah. So the degrees are, you know, there's no recruiting degree or, you know, now there's more, like SHRM, Society of Human Resource Management, has their professional, like a PHR, professional HR, individual, which is a great certification to get. But I think that's big. So if you're looking for a job, you almost have to interview your recruiter too, to be like,
yeah.
How long have you been with the company? Okay. So you've been there pretty new. Have you done architecture before? You know, no. Okay. Well, you know, that may be a red flag even for someone looking for a job, right? If it's new or if they're asking questions that, or you're asked questions as a candidate, like that may not make sense. Like, have you worked with this tool? It's like, that doesn't happen in engineering or design or whatever it is that right. It's just not something that people would use. It's a bit of a flag, but you did touch on something. So there's hard skills and soft skills, right? So your hard skills, it's your resume, right? You're not your resume. I'm not my resume, right? So we're all individuals, and that's more the soft skills. It's what's their attitude? Would they fit into that environment? So you may be able to check the box to say, yes, they have 3 to 5 years experience. Yes, they have a master's degree. Check. But what about if I found somebody who didn't have a master's degree, but they had decent experience? But they were, like you said, they have the passion for it. They learn their craft. They're interested in it. Like when they go home, they're designing other things that, you know, even if it's not related to architecture, but they just love drawing. Like, well, that's their passion. That's what they're good at. Like what they love doing, that really goes above and beyond. What do their coworkers look like as well? So I think, you know, what they look like. I mean, more like the environment, right? What kind of environment are they in, and is it going to be a fit for them? So both from looking for a job and from, you know, if someone's looking for a job, but also if you're hiring, mm-hmm. that's what they're looking for is this person going to fit in? You know, mm-hmm. can they pick it up? So for me, even nowadays in my role, like being telemedicine and by the way, we started the company because we wanted to be more of an employee benefit because people care about the benefits too. It's not just about the dollars and cents. I mean, it is, what else is there, right? Is there nowadays, everyone wants to work, you know, hybrid. They don't always want to work in the office. You know, people post a job where there's let's say an IT developer that they have to be in the office every day, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. You're going to get very few people apply because they want that flexibility. You can really do your job from home if you have a good communication mechanism, Slack, whatever it is, or just reporting tools. Mm-hmm. So there's more, right? But benefits, I mean, for us being telemedicine, I mean, healthcare tends to be a generation behind. So being able, we live in that DoorDash, Amazon Prime world, healthcare should really be the same and people should have access to it rather than like, okay, you know, this company has health insurance. It's okay. Here's my copay. But if I just talk to a doctor in 10 minutes and get a prescription if I need it and I don't have to go very far, amazing, right? So that's kind of our approach when we talk to companies about benefits they offer, because it's not just about dollars and cents. Anyway, so I'm jumping around a lot, but I think that, you know, either if it's for, But getting back to my point is, for me, when I look for people, the hard skills are 60%. Sure, they got to have that, but it's more about the attitude. It's more about, are they a fit? Like, because telemedicine, for example, it's pretty new. It's relatively new. It's not like I go find someone from a competitor. It's more about, can they pick up, you know, the new technologies, everything that we're doing, be adaptable? Mm. Can they get along with the team? So yeah,
you know, one of the hugest things for me is that learning when I was applying for jobs as a new student, I hadn't graduated yet and I was looking for internships, and I was applying for a job and I was so focused and so honed in on how does my resume look? Does it look like, you know, a really good landscape architecture student? And like, you go on Pinterest and you find these really cool layouts for design students and resumes, and you're just like, you're spending so much time on how the design of it and all that. And then, you know, I I tell my brother, you know, that I'm like, yeah, I'm applying. He's like, well, they're not going to know what the heck you're talking about. And he's like, why do you have this on your resume? And why do you say these words? And why do this? And he's like, you do realize that, you know, the person that you're going to be interviewing with, or who you're in, if you're interested in this job, you're going to be talking to the recruiter, and they don't know, or they're not going to be looking for that specifically. And so that really surprised me, because I was like, wait, it's not the architect interviewing me. And there were the landscape architects interview the directors and things like that. But I spoke to the recruiters. So I remember having conversations on the phone with a recruiter, and me being like, oh, yeah, do you know this project? And she's like, I have no idea what that is, but I'm sure the directors would know. And I was like, wow, I had no idea that I was marketing myself to the wrong person, but the right person.
Yep.
You know, I was marketing myself to somebody that I had no idea wasn't fully aware of all these projects and all these things. And but I had to market myself to them in order for them to take the right notes, I guess, to pass it over to the directors, I guess. So, you know, especially for students, you're never really told this information from the get-go. Mm-hmm. What can students expect when, or what should students expect? How should they sort of approach this looking for a new job situation, especially when you're not thinking about, like, you're thinking about the firm. You're thinking like, oh my God, I want to work for this firm. This firm is amazing. I want to make it look awesome. I want to do this. What are we wasting our time on? And what can we put our time in that will make us look fantastic to, you know, to hire?
It's a good, good point. So I'm going to give you a couple tricks of the trade, some secrets. So first thing, your resume is a marketing document. That's how you have to think about it. Tell the truth attractively. So I always say, like, I mean, you don't have to lie on your resume, because you're going to get into a job that's going to be way bigger, or you're going to fail miserably during an interview. You know, once you do get to that art, you know, design manager, whoever it is, they're going to sniff it out and say, this person can't do the job, right? So, and you may lose the opportunity with the whole firm. Tell the truth attractively. So let's go back to your resume example for a minute. So coming out of school, they probably don't tell you this either. If there's a small firm, let's say, and you go on Indeed, you go on ZipRecruiter, whatever, and it says, send your resume to this email address, send that design one. Send that cool design one, because you want them to see it. Mm. If it leads you to a link where you have to upload your resume and fill in all the information, there's a bunch of different ones. They're called ATSs, applicant tracking systems. That's where you actually upload your resume. Your resume actually gets parsed into their database, which is good. You want to be in the database. But if it's not formatted well, it's going to look all funky. Mm-hmm. And some of the key words are not going to be picked up. Wow. Most of the systems, and there's some out there, like iSIMS is a very popular one, Taleo, Bullhorn. I mean, so when you apply for a job, look at the URL, because it might actually have the name of the tool in there. So we'll say whatever, ABC, like, you know, Gensler.iSIMS.com. I don't know if they use iSIMS. I'm just saying. Yeah. but you know, you can tell, okay, well, they're using an ATS, an applicant tracking system. So what happens is it grabs keywords off your resume and parses it into the database. Uh-huh. So we'll say, Gracie has this experience, that experience, like these keywords. So it's kind of like a Google search. The more your resume has those same words, like, for example, let's say you're an expert with AutoCAD LT, like, mm-hmm. you know, or what design program do you use?
Yeah, CAD.
Yeah. Whatever, AutoCAD, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have it once in your resume, and that may be, you may be an expert at it, and you may have used it your last three jobs, but it's only on your third job, like your oldest one, it's not going to score you very high. It's going to say, Gracie has that experience three jobs ago, even though if you're using it every day.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So, or that's why sometimes at the bottom people have like a skills section. It's just so we'll get parsed, so your resume will get picked up. Oh. So that's a big thing. Now, once you go through that process, it's going to allow you to upload a document, maybe a degree or a professional license or something like that, upload that cool designed
the cool design
PDF. Yeah.
Wow.
So I, you know, when I was looking for jobs or changing jobs, whatever, I'd always have two versions of my resume. Yeah, one that was a little bit more nice, polished. I even had my little logos of Merrill Lynch, Disney, whatever. It looked cute, looked attractive, great. It kind of popped a little bit more. People were like, oh, cool. Like, this is, you know, they may recognize a logo, you know, versus, you know, I talk to people. I'm like, have you heard of ADP? They're like, sounds familiar. But really, it's a big payroll company. And one in five people in the U.S. get a paycheck from ADP, but they don't know it. But once they see the logo, they're like, oh, yeah, I've seen that before, yes. Right? So it's that kind of brand recognition that you're using to help get you a job. So that's fine, but also I'd have one that was a little bit more detail-oriented too. So I'm not one of those people that also kind of keeps to two pages, but, I mean, that is kind of the general rule. And so you want to make sure your resume, think about, so how do you know if your application is going to pop or not? And the answer is read the job description, because the job description will say the key things that they're looking for.
Yeah.
And the higher up in the job description, you can tell that's the most important things, right, that they're looking for. The first three bullet points are probably the top key things they're looking for. So for students out there, if you're looking for a job, your first job, and you go online to Indeed, ZipRecruiter, wherever you see a job, and you see your dream job, duplicate copy your resume, take the keywords of that job description, and put them into where you have that experience or things that you've done. Because A, it's going to do two things. Your resume is going to score higher once the recruiters look at the whole list of resumes that come in, and it's also going to get the attention of the hiring manager. So I know I said before, like, the recruiters, like, you know, might be a red flag or they don't have the experience. That's okay. Like, you actually did a great job. Like, you should, it doesn't mean you shouldn't work with that person. I mean, you just may have to educate them exactly, like, oh, that's a design tool we had. Oh, it was built in house. Like, you know, you won't see anywhere else, but it's similar to AutoCAD, you know, whatever other tools are out there. So that's kind of the idea. But yeah, that's, so sometimes if I saw my dream job, you know, I would want to make sure that there's keywords that they have on their job description that match mine.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That really gives also a lot of students and even young professionals just an advantage, because I think typically you make one resume and you just kind of copy and paste it to all the jobs that you have. But to tailor it to the job that you're applying for, even if it's for a different firm, because typically, again, you're a recent graduate, you're applying for landscape designer level one, you know, and you're thinking, okay, that's probably going to be the same description every single time.
Yeah.
But in a lot of ways it is, but I do think it is helpful to have at least some sense, what is the recruiter asking for specifically? And, you know, even if it's generally the same, it would be good also to know the company itself, because the company itself has its own values. They have their own direction.
Yep.
I remember even in my interviews, going into the mission statement of the company, going into their projects, getting a little bit more of an idea or a grasp on, hey, like, this is what they do. This is what they love doing. We, you know, we love material. We love this. We love that. Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. I'm going to emphasize that in my portfolio or in my resume even, you know, just really kind of pulling out those experiences that you've had or you've done, even the small ones, I guess, like even in school. And that's one thing too, is that when you're in school, like, you don't necessarily have experience. I think there's always that, that joke that's like, we want, like, you know, 5 years of experience, recent grad, you know, and you're like, What?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, that's, you're right. That's a big thing too. It's like, how do you have 5 years of experience or 3 years of experience? And so internships are important. I mean, that's good. I mean, especially with a big company, that's a good name to have on there.
Yeah.
They know kind of the training you got, the hands-on experience. So yeah, that's big. But for example, like, what about in school? Was there a design society, you know, something else there? Did maybe somebody volunteer with, you know, the grounds crews, you know, like, you know, for football games, whatever, like, it shows you're passionate about this. Like, this is what you want to do. Like, I care about how things look and you know, how the grounds look. I mean, even if you weren't designing it, that's okay. But it's very, very telling, I would think. Like, if I'm hiring a landscape architect and someone had actually done the landscaping work, like, that's pretty good, because, like, my hands were in there. I've been in the trenches. Oh, nice. I've done that work, right?
Yeah,
so that's pretty cool. So, like, don't dismiss those little jobs and play them up. But again, it's a marketing document. You got to sell it.
That's really good. Yeah.
There's something else you said in there that I wanted to go back to. But absolutely. I think it's you're not going to have 3 to 5 years of experience in college. But yeah. With the mission statements and all that stuff too, I mean, you do want to show how you're a fit for the company.
Yeah.
So when I say tell the truth attractively and your resume is a marketing document, all your resume does get you an interview. That's all you want. And then once you're there, then you spend time researching the company. Then you spend time going through this, because that's your opportunity. You just want the interview. That's what everyone's goal should be, is get an interview. That's all your marketing, your resume should do is get you that interview. Like, no one should be fired as a surprise to be like, what? Like, no one ever told me that before, right? But if you do get feedback, that's important. Like, during your performance reviews or whatever, that type of thing. Yeah. It's like, hey, you know what? You can communicate a little bit better or whatever it is. Like, okay, fine. Like, great. Then you got to work on those things. So I would say that, if the company isn't developing you, there are certain things that you should do to also develop yourself, whatever, if it's your favorite books, podcasts, whatever it is, great. Like, I, even now, like, I mean, it is my company, but no one is developing me. It's up to me to go do that. So, like, for example, I think you brought up, you know, did you bring up AI? Did you mention AI earlier or something like that? No?
Maybe, no.
Anyway, sorry. My last Zoom call, they're asking me about AI. But I took it upon myself to go do a graduate certificate in AI through MIT, because no one was going to teach me that. I can't just, you know, no one's going to like pop me like, hey, Jesse, like, let's go learn this. I mean, I have to learn that to stay ahead of the curve too. So that's, I understand in my case, my company, it's up to me, but in some cases it might be up to you as well. Right. And how is the company changing? Kind of read those signs. But let me give you two quick examples. It's not people that I recruited. These are personal stories. So when I first joined that company in Philadelphia, and my mentor for many years brought me over, and like I said, she's developed me as best she could. Well, she was now president of this company, which is part of a $2.5 billion defense contractor. She didn't have time to go develop 32-year-old new vice president Jesse. So she saw that, and she saw that I was struggling 6 months in reporting to her, and she said, I'm gonna change who you report to. I'm gonna give you, I'll say his name, J.O. Johnson. And he became another mentor to me because he developed me. He said, hey, when we're in these big meetings in the boardroom, like, say less, you know, like, listen more. One mouth, two ears, you know, whatever it was. Because I just wanted to fill air, because I was like, people need to hear me. They need to think I'm smart. And I was worried about that. But I was just babbling. So it was not good. So that was a very, very good experience where they took the time to develop me. Yeah. And even in that position. So companies even have a list, like big companies have like their HR department. They have what they call high pots, high potentials, like people that they want to develop to grow more into further roles, or people that may not be doing well, but they believe they have the right skill sets. You know, they have the right hard skills, but they just don't have whatever, maybe some of the softer skills, but they believe in them. So you can develop those people as well. So it just depends if the company is built for that too. And of course, there's a lot of coaching companies as well. So one of my friends, John Kirshner, runs Ares Consulting. It's one of the largest employee executive coaching companies. So even high level people need to be coached to keep up with whatever it is. Someone who's been a CEO for many, many years doesn't know why they're getting beat up online on TikTok. He'll be like, what's a TikTok? You know, like that type thing. Yeah. So they got to develop that and how to reach different generations and populations and demographics. So that was a very good experience where I was fortunate to have someone develop me. If I don't do it today myself, like, no one's going to do it for me. But I also was fortunate to have that. He's fast forward to that job and that I took in Louisiana. They flew me down for 4 days for interviews. A day and a half of interviews, or 2 days of interviews. And 2 days they wanted me to spend in Lafayette, Louisiana to see if I could live there, coming from Philly. Like, is this a fit for you? And the interviews were great. Everyone's super smiley and nice, and they're very excited that I would, you know, come join the company and help them grow and build infrastructure. It was a company that grew very, very fast. And somebody at the company that resonated with me a lot, they said, you know, the body grew, but the skeleton didn't grow. So that's what we need you for. We need to help build that infrastructure. And the company is running operations. I said, sure, this is slam dunk, easy, easy. When I got there, it was a different story. That was probably one of the worst jobs I've ever had.
Wow.
It actually was the worst job I've ever had. And being in the recruiting world and reading the signs and all this, you never really can tell. So it just may have not been a fit for you in the end, or maybe things changed. But, you know, the interview process was a big marketing document. It was a big, you know, it was great. But afterwards, I realized, like, this is, once I started working there, I was like, this is not what I signed up for. Wow. This is very, very different. The people there were very insular. They didn't want, you know, well, you're like an outsider, right?
So, yeah.
And it was very hard to make changes.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are bosses that I was very fortunate to learn from what to do, how to coach my people now, and how to develop them. And that was a really good experience of what not to do as a boss.
Wow.
And it was, like I said, I think I probably, you know, aged like dog years working there. It was the culture was very bad. People were, like, again, very insular. If you were an outsider, they didn't want you. Like, it was really, they weren't really interested in growing. They weren't really heeding the advice, you know, of people that really knew what they were doing. They ended up bringing in a whole management consulting company to bring a whole new C-level into the company, just because it wasn't going well. And I think they're doing okay now. Who knows? But that was one of the worst experiences I've ever had. So you learn kind of from everything, right? So that should be an experience for you. Be like, hey, like, I maybe didn't see the signs and read the signs, and, you know, this happened,
right,
or whatever it was, and, you know, now you know how to communicate better, you know,
exactly,
whatever it is,
yeah.
and great. But communication is different from company to company. You thought you may have been communicating fine,
yep.
But like, hey, no one uses the Slack channel. You're talking to yourself, like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly,
or whatever it is. But like, you know, people prefer, you know, text or email or whatever it is, or set up a Zoom or follow up or I don't know, whatever it is. So it just depends.
Yeah. And then, you know, what you touched on too was like personal development, right? Like, mm-hmm, recognizing the areas that you could be doing better and improving in, but then also the company development. That's huge. I think a lot of people, and I'll just say, you know, I'll speak into students, but also just young professionals, do not know what, like, personal or what company development even looks like. I think a lot of times there's even high expectations of, like, well, you're like, there's two sides to this. There's either, I'm going to go into this, I'm going to murder myself, and I'm going to give it everything that I have. I don't care. I will, like, I won't eat, I won't sleep, I'm going to be here for 12 hours a day. No problem. Then there's a other end of the spectrum where it's like, well, if you're not helping me do anything, like, it, you know, you're not catering to me, I guess, then, like, it's not worth me working here because you're not building me up. So how do we find this happy medium to where we're not demanding so much from our project managers? Because project managers are really, they're wearing all the hats.
Yep.
You know, so not demanding so much from your project manager, but then also just saying, hey, like, I actually really need help. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm being asked to do this task. I don't know how to do this task. You know, but just trying to balance, like, what that looks like. Every project, mm-hmm, too, has a budget. You know, every project has a budget.
Right.
Everything, you can't go over the budget. You can't, well, don't spend too much time on this, you know, whatever. Like, oh my God, okay. So how can we sort of look for that, mm-hmm, ask for that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the issue, right? If they're assigning you a task that you have no idea what you're doing,
right,
your probability to fail is probably pretty high, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the first thing. You know, and if your boss or the project manager knows that this is new territory for you, and they might say, hey, you know what, Gracie, you're smart, you'll figure it out. Okay, great. So you're going to give your best shot. But if it doesn't work out, you know, you kind of gave them the fair warning. So I think there's nothing wrong. So yes, project managers are super busy and they're spinning plates, making sure everything is kind of where it needs to be and the project is green, it's moving forward, great, everything is on track and on budget. So you're afraid, people are naturally afraid to bother them. But you gotta ask for your piece of the pie to be like, hey, like this needs attention. Like I need some help here. Just, you know, help me understand, what does this look like? What does this task look like? I've never done this before. Is this for me? Yes, for me. Okay. You know, just, you know, so you may have to rely on your other skills. And that's kind of what I was saying when companies are recruiting, like half the time, like, hey, you know what? You're smart. You'll figure it out. It's okay. You know, or if they don't, then that's okay. But somebody probably knows how to do it. Right. Yeah. So you may have to ask others, peers, people even, you know, that you work with, maybe people in different roles or functions that may have had exposure to that project. Ask for examples. And then obviously Google's your best friend. Like, I don't know what the task is, but that's really, you want to see what it looks like on the other end. And but yeah, you have to ask questions and really find out, like, you know, is it, you want me to do all of this? Oh, no, I just asked for this piece. Oh, that I can knock out in a week.
Right, sure, exactly,
no problem. So you just have to really make sure it's always define a what by when. Like, what do they want and by when? So going back to what you said before, like, you know, do you sacrifice and throw yourself in? I mean, I'm the worst person to ask because I'm not the smartest person in the room. But I will outwork anybody. I will work no problem. Like, that's how we've been more successful at Doctegrity, is we outwork all of our competitors that have more money, smarter people, whatever it is, like, great. But we will work harder. And that's kind of the difference with us. So so I'm a bad person to ask about that. because I did interview someone and I remember, like, so I was like, so what's important for you in a role? And I was thinking, like, you know, meaningful work, blah, blah. And this person said, like, you know, like self-care, you know, what does vacation look like? You know, that sort of thing. I'm like, okay, like, we didn't start yet. Like, you know, they're out of college, you know, and in expectations, right? So coming out of school as well. So not only, sorry to reference this too, but you mentioned about, like, the skill sets and, like, hey, you know, this is the skill set, but, like, also a big deal breaker for companies is asking for too much money out of the gate. Like, if you, how
interesting.
So for example, at Disney, the fact that we're on the contract labor recruiting side, like, we had to hire some pretty high level technical people at much lower pay rates, much lower pay rates. Why? Because when they left, they would make more money because they had Disney on their resume, but they also got to work with the latest and greatest cutting edge tools. So there's value there, right? So it doesn't translate to dollars and cents all the time, but the fact that you worked there, you did this work, and it was with the coolest, latest and greatest stuff, that adds value to that person as well, right? When they're done or whatever, maybe even move into a full-time role with the company. So that's a very key thing too. So yeah, so it's, so obviously tying it all together, I think, yeah, making sure you ask for clarification on what the task is, ask other people, yes, if that's assigned to me, great. And let them know, don't wait till the end of when something is due to be like, by the way, I've never done this before and here's what I think it looks like. That's, you're setting yourself up for failure. Right. So personal development, right? Like, make sure you ask those questions, like, right. Lay out what it is, get everything done, and you know, those managers are in that role for a reason because they have higher ups they got to answer to. You know, project manager answers to an executive sponsor of whatever the project is. So, you know, or the design manager. So that's big. So they don't want to look bad. And
right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so for company development,
what do you mean by company development, by the way?
Sorry, I meant more of like, what is the company doing to develop you? That's what I meant by that. But like, I guess what would be a good question to ask in an interview, you know, to kind of see what the company is doing to help develop their employees.
Yeah. So interviews are not just for the company. They're for you. Like, at some point, like, when the biggest missed opportunity, when somebody says, you know, they have their interview at the end, I'm like, do you have any questions for me? They're like, no, because they just don't want to burden them. They don't want to ask them. Mm-hmm. Now, if you do ask the wrong questions, could be a bad thing, right? But you can say, so people that have been in this role before, you know, where do they go from here? That's a fair question to ask, right? So it shows that you want to stay with the company, you want to grow, you want to be there. Great. Our parents' generation, I'm older than you, so it might be your grandparents' generation. The whole idea of like working for a company for 40, 45 years, retiring, getting a gold watch, it doesn't normally happen anymore. On average, and this is an old stat because I've been out of recruiting for a few years. That's why I'm kind of giving you the tricks of the trade, because a few years ago, people really have been upset for me to tell you a lot of this stuff. But but it's important for everybody to know like how things work on the back end.
Yeah.
But even going back, I think the number I heard was like on average, people have 10 to 12 career jobs. And that's an old number from several years ago. But that's big, 10 to 12 career jobs. So that's kind of interesting to think about. So you do want to show longevity, because they don't want people that they're going to hire and invest in to train and get up to speed. And then even a year later, you're out the door. Like you move on to something else. So, but I think by showing interest, like, hey, so people that started with this internship, like what percent usually get hired on for a job? Right. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very, it's not bad to ask a question that way, mm-hmm. to say like, so what percent usually move on to full-time positions? Mm-hmm. And if you ask it in a genuine way, rather than like, well, how many people actually get hired from this? It's very different. Right. Mm-hmm. So when you're in that interview and you're asking questions, right, it's, what is it? The 7-38-55 rule. It's like the 7% is just what you say. The 35 is kind of like your tone, and 55% is your body language when you're doing that too. Or maybe I messed that up, but
yeah.
Go read Chris Voss's book.
There's a ratio.
It's important, right? Mm-hmm. When you're asking questions too, to make sure you ask them the right way and say, you know, where do people go from here? And, you know, what does the growth pattern look like? It's okay to ask, like, what's the development plan if it is a junior level role, a junior designer, drafting, or, you know, internships for sure. But if you're kind of 5 years experience, you know, and be like, well, what does the development plan look like or whatever? It's like, you know, kind of should know what you're doing here, right? So, yeah. The other thing too is even though I mentioned like people have 10 to 12 career jobs, flipping jobs pretty often, I think, in my opinion, if they're not contract jobs, it's still kind of a bad thing. I mean, people want to see that they're able to hold down a job and to be successful in that role and then move on. Sure. Like you always, you know, for me, that was very big, like to always take the next best job, like to move up levels. Mm-hmm. Lateral could be okay if you are taking with a different company. But going back to my Schumacher job, I'll say this too, like people don't leave the company, they leave their bosses, period. I mean, that's why people leave jobs nowadays. It's not because, oh, I don't believe in the, you know, the company mission, but it's like, maybe it is that culture, maybe it is the environment, and you've said something to your boss and they don't do anything about it and you feel ostracized. They don't make you feel included with the group or whatever it is, like, you know, even going out for happy hour, they don't invite you out. Like, still, it's just kind of the culture, but your boss does have an influence on that. They do have a sphere of influence. And, but yeah, for me, that was big. Like I didn't necessarily leave Schumacher. I mean, I have hard feelings against them, but really it was because my boss, I left my boss. That's why.
Wow. Yeah, that's huge. Leaving your boss versus, because they do set the tone for the team.
Yeah.
You know, and they're the one, I guess, calling
and for
the
you
shots,
and your development plan and, you know, and so salaries true. And money and reviews and all that stuff too. Mm-hmm. So going back to my old mentor, J.O. Johnson, like I remember one review I had. He's like, look, I don't give 5 stars, you know, give me a pretty good review. But he goes, look, I'm happy to have you here. Keep doing what you're doing. Like I was... And he goes, you know what, unfortunately, whatever it was, like that year, like we didn't hit the bonus numbers. That was enough of a bonus for me, right? I left that office, I was like beaming ear to ear. It's like, hey, did you get a bonus? Like, nope. That's okay, you know, but it was just like, I wanted to go to work the next day.
You know?
When you're dragging to get to work, I mean, I mean, sure. I mean, we all see the memes, but I get it. You know, still, yeah. You know, got to go to work. But
Yeah. So when you're trying to, you know, going back to the interview process, you know, from I'm curious to see from both perspectives, from the person being interviewed and the person interviewing, mm-hmm. from a recruiter, as a recruiter interviewing this, you know, potential person.
Yep.
What kinds of questions do you ask to help, you know, bridge this gap of this matchmaking process, you know, yep. like the firm and the person? What kind of questions how would you narrow that down?
Yeah. Really, really important to, like, even when we were at Merrill Lynch, I didn't understand a lot of the technologies. I wasn't an IT guy. I was an engineering guy. Like, I knew all the engineering and design, and that was very big for me. So I would go into the hiring manager's office, be like, hey, do you have a few minutes for me? Like, so what does this mean? What are you looking for? Like, if that recruiter knows, like, what's really key, then great. As a person looking for a job, I mean, it's okay to ask the recruiter, because keep in mind, they're the first layer to get, they could be your biggest advocate to be like, you know what, I interviewed Grace, like, her resume doesn't look great, but she's awesome. Like, you got to meet her. Like, anybody who brought me a resume, like, when I was in different roles, you know, on the recruiting team, be like, the resume doesn't look great, but, like, they're awesome. They're a rock star. Like, you got to meet them. I'm going to meet them, you know, like, so that's very big. So you can ask recruiters, so what's important to the hiring manager, right? What are they like, you know, and just ask those questions. That helps bridge some gaps as well. And it's also a time for you to kind of clarify what's in the job description. Like, I see here that you're looking for a new grad, but 5 years experience. So like, do you want someone kind of like newer grad, or are they looking for more somebody experienced, or, oh, they'll take either or. Be like, okay, well, I graduated a year ago and I have a year experience, and, you know, that internship's kind of, I've outgrown that. I'm looking for my next job, like a real, you know, full-time type position. Like, that's a good answer. So, but yeah, clarify with a recruiter. The recruiter should have the information. If they don't, they can probably talk generalities. Like, if they're like, I don't know this hiring manager, but I know we typically hire A, B, C skill set. Great. Yeah, perfect. I have that. I'm sorry I didn't detail it on my resume, but here's what it is. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see the movie Wolf of Wall Street? Mm-hmm. So the guy, the main character, Leonardo DiCaprio, plays a person by the name of Jordan Belfort. And he's just this hardcore sales guy. And he's actually still around today. He has a whole sales training. But one of the things he says is to his people is, you have 5 seconds to sell someone in that first, to capture their attention in that phone call. And it's funny, Harvard did a study and they said, actually, you have 6 seconds. Fine. What sucks about recruiting nowadays is, on average, recruiters on the very initial screen look at resumes for about 11 seconds. So you gotta have that information there, like I said, to grab their attention. And then once they call you, that's a good thing, right? And just, that's your opportunity. Like, that phone call already, be like, hey, Gracie, I saw that you sent your resume over, you know, for this position, you know, are you available for an interview? Yes. Okay, great. Before they set up that interview, because sometimes like a junior recruiter who like might set up for the main recruiter, like, ask some questions. Like, it's okay to be like, you know, are there a lot of people who are interviewing right now? Like, you want to know what your competition's like? You know, any other details? So yeah, I think it's more important about the job. Money. If they don't bring it up, you don't bring it up. And as a rule, a general rule, I would never talk money on the first interview. So don't bring up money unless they do.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's big.
Yeah, and I was gonna say too, like, for interviewing and stuff, I mean, it's always so hard to know how to approach interviews, because you don't want to talk about things like as if you're going to get hired, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to be like, oh, yeah, when I start working there, when, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you want to have a certain level of confidence, and you want to not necessarily in that I'm going to get hired, but like confidence in yourself and your abilities. And even if you don't have enough of the skill set, you could just even say that, you know, if you don't have all of the skills, you know, if you don't have all of the hard skills, for example, you know, is it okay to tell the person that, you know, is interviewing you. You know, I don't know that 100%, or, you know, just kind of even expressing maybe that.
Yeah. Like I said, tell the truth attractively. So yeah. For example, what's another design system you use? I keep going back to AutoCAD.
Land Effects.
Which
Land
one?
Land Effects.
Land Effects. Mm-hmm. So if they say, you know, must have Land Effects experience. Mm-hmm. And if they say, do you have Land Effects experience? It's very different to say, nope. Versus, you know what? I know design really well. My main tool I used is AutoCAD. But I've seen it and I can get my designs in there just as easy as I do with AutoCAD. I probably have a really short ramp up window, and I've even thought about, you know, tinkering around with it at home just for some small projects, just so I'm familiar with it. Very different answer than, like, you both said no, right? Like, you haven't, but so we see that a lot, let's say, in the IT world. It's like, oh, do you have React or Python? It's like, no, but they have, like, a whole laundry list of other things. Like, the language, if you know those, you can probably pick it up pretty fairly. Like, in some cases, you might be able to, unless it's, like, vastly different. You know the work. You just may not know the exact tool or whatever. So that's where the rest is going to come in, with the attitude and showing, like, hey, you know what, I'm really interested, I'm seeing more and more things about it, but I'm very fast in the other systems, like, okay, with the other tools. That's a good answer. But, like, hey, I have no problems the other ones, I design, you know, very, very quickly and whatever, draft in these tools and okay, half the time, and I'm sure, like, I've heard really good things about it, and I don't think it'll be that hard for me to pick it up.
I think that's what
you're saying. Not ideal, but it's better than saying, yeah, I've never used it, no.
That's kind of what you want to express, is that you have knowledge of the actual software and that you have used similar softwares to kind of help, just, I guess, sort of express that you're willing and able to kind of pick it up and learn it.
Just keep in mind, yeah, exactly. Just keep in mind, recruiters are writing notes to send to the manager or inputting it in the ATS. So if you say nope, it's like, do they have experience? Nope, right? Versus like,
yeah.
You know, exactly. Say, if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with BS, right?
Yeah.
We'll say the actual word, but you know what I mean? Like, so there you go. Yeah. At least, like, you know, yeah, I'm saying baffled, but you're speaking to your experience. You're telling the truth attractively. Like, I know how to do the work, but I just don't have that tool. Think about how you'd spin it.
Okay. I have a question too just kind of transitioning into, okay, let's say we're starting to get into the workforce now. This person gets hired, they were interviewed, they got the job, great. And the environment is not what they kind of expected. And let's even say that they don't, like most people, like what we're talking about with the conversation that I've been hearing circulate a lot with landscape designers, is that they're getting fired or they're getting laid off from their positions, and they're just like, what the heck? Like, is it me or is it the, like, what is it? So how is it that we can, you know, like, we quit the job, right? That if it's not a good fit, we quit, right? Like, would you say that? And then now looking forward, you know, how can we kind of go on for the next one and sort of look for the best fit for us, you know?
So it's kind of like any relationship. You got to figure out, like, do I want to salvage this, you know, or do I want to kind of, like, hey, this is, like, we just need to move on. So if, let's say, you found that job through an outside recruiter, like through a recruiting firm, and you have a really good, open and honest relationship with that recruiter, even 2-3 months later, you should call them and say, hey, by the way, like, what are your thoughts? Like, what are other people saying? Like, what are they, like, and they'd be like, why, what's wrong, right? Because they're earning fees, right? So on you being there. So you can say to them, like, you know, like, hey, this is this is not what I signed up for, type thing. Like, I want to work it out. Like, they can even help advise you. Or if it's nothing too major, but, like, you know, for example, it's not an inclusive environment or whatever it is that you feel is not right with the culture. I mean, that is why they have HR. You have to be careful. That's, and I very, very cautious when it comes to HR departments. They can also be very helpful, or they kind of act as the internal police, which, you know, I've had some experiences where it's really not the case. But if you have a good HR person that can help you, and they might be able to advise you, be like, hey, you know what, we have these you know, groups sometimes, like, for example, we had, like, my old company had, like, the young professional group, or we had you know, the veterans, you know, help group type thing too. So not that I'm a veteran, but, you know, we would do stuff like around Christmas time, send cards and gifts to Walter Reed, you know, that time for the vets. We would do more for the veteran community. That was really cool. So it was, or they had, you know, the volunteer aspects too. We would do like Habitats for Humanity, whatever. So you get more involved with some things. So you may have to like jump back in to kind of, you know, rather than pulling back, be like, you know what, I'm just going to give this a shot, try it. But, you know, not everything, not every hiccup is a deal breaker, right? So, but yeah, so if it's really bad, A, you may want to go back to that original recruit, be like, hey, it's not what I signed up for. And you may even want to say, like, can you keep your eye out for something else for me? That's one thing. And if you're going to leave anyway, I'm sure that recruit would like to try to place you somewhere else. Or you could talk to your HR department, or if you have an open honest relationship with your supervisor, your boss as well, and say, you know, hey, like, I'm just not, there's something off, you know, I'm doing my work or whatever it is, but I think that's big. So, but sometimes the culture is just off. Like, you know, you have people that are not good at their jobs, that they get promoted, like, everyone hates that. It's the biggest disengagement thing that you could do, you know, is promote the non-performers, people that aren't doing well for, you know, whatever reason that they have. And that's, it's frustrating. So you're like, how am I going to move up in this company? I mean, it's a bit of a red flag that you have to think about too. So yeah, but I would talk to peers, talk to other people, talk to your mentors, see what they think as well. When I was struggling at that Schumacher company, and just to fit in the culture and everything, and I called my mentor Lori, and she said, look, you know, sometimes you learn things from your bosses that you've had good experiences from, and you have bosses that show you what not to do, and unfortunately it sounds like that's the case. So you take your lessons learned, and you know, that's it. So so it just depends.
It depends, of course. Yeah,
but it was just, you should be able to sniff it out pretty easy. But but there's a big difference between laid off and being fired, for sure.
Yeah.
Lay off, like, hey, the work ran out. So work ran out, project didn't come to fruition. They were bidding on a bunch of stuff. They got none of it. Well, maybe the company is pricing things too high. They're not going to get any more work. So, you know, it's a warning sign anyhow. Being terminated is a bit different, right? And you should, I never believe anyone should be terminated. Like, that's a total shock to them.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And what if, you know, you want to stay in the company and you're like, you know what, I kind of want to give this another shot. How can you have a conversation with your boss, you know, about that? Because that's very nerve-wracking to think about. You know, it's like, ah, you know, I like their values. I like, you know, sometimes I'm not happy with the work, or, you know, sometimes things don't get through as well. Or how can you have a conversation with, an open, honest conversation with your boss about that, you know, kind of, I don't want to break up with you guys, but
you know,
kind of thing. But I'm considering it because, you know, whatever.
So it depends on your boss. It really, really does. The last company I worked for that I could never have an open, honest conversation because it always backfired.
Wow.
Yeah. So you just got to be really weary. Some other ones, I could say that. I'd be like, hey, listen, like, I feel like the team, you know, is performing up here, and I feel like I'm like trying to play catch up all the time. Like, what am I doing wrong?
Right.
You know, and it's their interest to grow and develop you. The other thing I'd say, Gracie, is be careful of, and I was kind of smiling because, like, you gotta be careful of the words you're using. I'd like to give this another shot. Another shot means in your mind, you're already gone. Like, you're kind of half gone, right? You guys, right? I want to work with you guys, you, not we. Like, it's different if you're saying, like, the team's here and I want to make sure I'm pulling my weight with the team. You're still, you're in your mind, like, that tells me, like, you're still on the team and you just want to be on par with everyone else, or to be at their level. But if it's like, you know, you guys are doing this. It's like you're already putting yourself outside of that.
Yeah.
So word selection is actually kind of big there. So huge. Think about that too. If it's a you guys thing, yeah, I would definitely try to be on the job hunt already, right? And also be careful about, like, you know, posting your resume online, all that stuff too, because we, you know, sometimes companies will search Indeed, CareerBuilder, whatever it is, or, you know, ZipRecruiter, and find resumes of people working at the company, right, that are there now, that are looking for a change, and be like, they're a flight risk, or we're going to have to backfill that role, right? So it causes distrust. So just be wary about people posting your own resume online.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's true. Using the right terminology, and also not, I guess, if you're considering leaving the job, there's nothing wrong with, I guess there's nothing wrong with having a conversation with the boss and kind of just not telling them, I guess, that you're thinking about leaving, that just, if you're still open for it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, right. I mean, if you make the conversation like you're kind of like, think about leaving, nobody wants to hear that, right? Unless, but also no boss wants to be surprised that you're just up and leaving.
Exactly.
So,
because things have to have been communicated previously.
On both sides. On both sides. So that's the thing. Like, hey, I don't feel like, I feel like the team's like up here. I'm trying to play catch up. Like, the project manager gave me this task that I have no idea what to do with this. You know, like, you know, what should I do? You know, or is this just a one-off? Or is it like, is this always going to happen? Right.
So, exactly.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. How, I'm talking the younger generation, right? So younger demographic out there, are they on LinkedIn? Do people have like,
you know,
resumes, profiles on LinkedIn?
They do, but honestly, it's predominantly the people that are like go-getters in the industry. Like, you get people who are just like, you know, they're made for this, and they do it. But most cases, they're on LinkedIn, but they don't use it as much.
Get on LinkedIn. Okay, get on LinkedIn. If you're not on LinkedIn, get a profile on there. Nobody wants to call it drinking pictures. Get a headshot. Go to wherever you got to get a headshot from. I mean, but that is part of. It is a marketing document, but it's your digital footprint. LinkedIn, from an SEO perspective, pulls very high, right? So it's one of the first things that always pull up when you're searching someone or whatever it is. So, and to see what you're connected to make sure things kind of match your resume as well, you know, to identify gaps and everything too. Sometimes people just upload a resume and it kind of pre-populates a lot of it. But they're recruiters. Like, recruiters can pay for a recruiting account on LinkedIn that will give them access to search more people, search by company, like a lot of different ways. So, I mean, for example, I have a lot of my connections on LinkedIn, and I'm probably a bit of an anomaly where I know most of my LinkedIn people, are just the majority, not everybody, but some people, they just add everybody. Recruiters, sometimes it's like their own mini database is like their, like, you know, LinkedIn kind of connections. It is social media. It's a professional social media networking. But it is the place where you can go to recruit, look at people, see for yourself when you're looking at another company as well. Like, if you're looking to join a company, or maybe you're recently laid off or fired from one company, oh, I really want to join, you know, Gensler Architects. Well, you can go on there and you can see the profiles of the people that A, work there, but look at their profiles and see where they worked before, and be like, oh, they also worked at ABC, XYZ company or whatever it is, right? And also, you know, great, I worked there too. You know, you're already a good fit for them. So yeah, little things like that, but LinkedIn is very important. I mean, I can't stress that enough across the board. Yep.
Wow. And so getting a LinkedIn profile is just going to help kind of get your name out there. Like you said, digital footprint. It's going to help, I'm sure, even employers or your people within the company be able to get more of an insight as to who this person is. Because the recruiter is going to be doing the job to interview, but then at the same time, it's perfect for those who are even working in the company, the directors, to be able to get an insight as to who is this person? Why are we interviewing them? And personality and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, one of the people I once hired, when I left my last corporate job and kind of went out on my own, I hired him because he had one little phrase on his LinkedIn profile, and it was that he was the captain of his college hockey team. Even though he was 5 or 7 years out of college. I'm a hockey fan. I'm a hockey nut, right? Through and through, play hockey, right? But when you play college hockey, it shows that, A, you can be part of a team. Like in hockey, for example, like you have to contribute individually to the team. That's a big, big thing, right? So going back to you, I think you asked before about like the college side of things, like how important is college? Yeah, the groundskeeping. Like if you want to do landscape architecture and you work on the groundskeeping team, like that's huge. Like it's in your blood, right? But the same thing, like all these things, different societies, groups, or whatever. But those college activities are valuable on some, you never know. But like that to me was Philip was a leader, right? He was a captain of the team, and he played at a high level that he knew how to run that team, but also be part of it and to be an individual contributor. So the whole team would be successful. That is, I know companies that they hire at a college that they look for varsity athletes from a team sports.
Wow. Yeah. That's actually really important. Look back at your college experience. Look back at the everything that you did and pull out any skill set that you might have earned that could fit within. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a hard skill. It has to be teamwork, communication, work ethic, you know, all those things that pull out all of that stuff from those experiences, and not to discount any of that.
Yep.
I have a friend of mine who's doing, she's in landscape design, but she also does, what's that? Improv.
Mm-hmm.
Improv. I'm like, that's awesome. Like put that on your resume, you know, like,
cause
you're that's all that is, teamwork. Like you're working with a team, you're collaborating, you're communicating, you're having to make up things as you go,
you think
on your feet. Like that's exactly, not to discount any experience you've had.
Fake intelligence, you can't fake wit, right? So that's a good thing about, you know, improv. I think that's important. So the other thing I'd say is once you start interviewing, and you go in for an in-person interview, and nowadays so much is on Zoom as well, but our Zoom interviews. But even so, when you're in that person's office or even on Zoom, look around their office, especially in person. What do they have on their walls, right? Maybe they have a picture of, you know, whatever, you know, a hockey picture. Oh, great. You know what? I should play hockey in college. Oh, you did? What did you do? Like, you'll see how more of the conversation will be geared towards that. Like, oh, by the way, I guess we should talk about work. Okay, so what are you here for, right? You know, so, or whatever it is, like tennis or any sort of like things they have in their office. Like, why do people have stuff in their office? Because they're passionate about it. They like it, it's there.
A shared
passion, common ground is very, very big. So I think that's big. Yeah, common ground. And also going on LinkedIn to look at the person who you're going to be interviewing with. That's important, right? So even if it's a recruiter, find them on their for sure on LinkedIn, for sure. I promise you they're on LinkedIn and, you know, where do they go to college? Maybe some common ground, like something you can always pull out something that you can talk to. It softens up the conversation. It makes it a little easier. So yeah,
that's awesome. I'm going to shift the conversation slightly because you have used this word quite a bit.
Yeah.
And, it's one big word, at least in my vocabulary right now, is passion. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you passionate about? A lot of times you're encouraged to pursue your passions and the money will come. That's usually the phrase that's always, you know, said. So, you know, you're encouraged to do that. It's like, yes, that makes total sense. You know,
that's a lie.
Tell me more, please.
That's a lie.
I'm
passionate about a lot of things. I remember maybe a penny, right? I spent more money on hockey equipment, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not entirely, it's a half lie, half truth. I mean, you do want, if you find a job that you're good at, that you can make money at, that you're passionate about, you're in your dream job, hands down. That's it. If you're passionate about, you know, landscape architecture, you live and breathe it, you on vacation, you want to go to, you know, if you live in Philly, Longwood Gardens, you go in the Dallas Arboretum here, you're looking and seeing these things, like that's your, because that's what you're passionate about. Yeah. I was born in Ottawa, Ontario. They have the Tulip Festival because the Netherlands sends over all these tulips every year because they, during the war, some prince, I think, was born on Canadian soil. But they, anyway, so it was just, so they're very grateful. So every year they send like so many tulips. They have a whole tulip. Like, that's your passion. Like, that's what you're into and you're good at your job. Yes, your passions will make you money. But if it's something you're passionate about, some people love makeup, right? And they say, well, I'm gonna go sell like Unique, you know, or whatever it is, or Mary Kay, sure. Like, if you're, for many people, some people are very successful at it, but most people it's a hobby. You're passionate about it. It's great. You often end up buying in or spending your money, but like they don't really sell it, right? So, you know, whatever it is, that maybe that's a bad example, but think about your passions. What are people passionate about? And very few people end up really doing well from their passions, or that they, unless you know, like, for example, my two sisters, like, they grew up knowing they wanted to be doctors and that was what they're passionate about, and everything from elementary, high school, college, medical school, residency was all about that. I mean, that's amazing. But you, I mean, being for me in healthcare, I can talk to a doctor and say, this person's here for the money, that's why they became a doctor, or they love helping people, and that's what it's about. So it's, yes, you can make money from your passions, but just be very wary about what is a passion and what is a hobby. You know, it's a hobby. It doesn't, like, if you're spending more money than you're making on it, you know, that's it. So I don't always believe that follow your passions and the money will come. If you can become passionate about what you're doing, that's great. You know, like that's great. I think that's where you'd be successful. But I don't know. What did you mean? Like, I didn't cut you off, but I was like, man, that's such a lie, because there's so many things that I'm passionate about that made me a penny, right? So if you think about, like I said, like your dream job is always your passions, what you're good at, and what makes you money. So that is really, you know, I love hockey. I live in California. Like, sure, and I think I'm good at recruiting and finding talent and identifying talent. Sure, I would love to be a talent scout for the Anaheim Ducks. It's never going to happen. It's not going to happen, right? But those would be my three worlds kind of coming together. So, but that's you know, I don't know how to really drive that. So I heard the stat the other day, like, 1 out of 30 million, like your chance of making the NFL is 1 in 30 million, you know, like it's a huge, huge number. Like all professional sports kind of like that. Right. So, that's why I would say, like, is it a passion or is it, but there are many varsity college athletes that use their passion to get scholarships to go do other things. Right. So,
but having passions, like if, you know, if you're looking for, a landscape designer level mm-hmm. one and you're looking at their resume, like having a passion is not a bad thing, right? Like having a passion and building up this sort of
absolutely
person, the person everyone's that you passions. Are sure, everyone yeah. have everyone has passions, yeah. but to use those passions to your advantage to be able to say, hey, I'm qualified for this job, or I can do this job well because of not only have I used my passions in a way that will help me, but that I am a passionate person, I have interests, I have things that I enjoy, and
absolutely
yeah. So
Is that let's take your improv person friend as an example, right? Mm-hmm. Passionate about it, great at it, but she doesn't do it for a living, right? Right. So mm-hmm. that's what it's about, right? It's you know, it's helping her get a job, sure. But maybe not in that field specifically. Maybe she's not doing stand up, you know, maybe she's not working at, you know, improv. So mm-hmm. it's kind of maybe so specifically like doing your actual passion as that, but are you leveraging things that,
yeah, that's the word.
You know, are you leveraging your passions to, you know, from just kind of like, hey, it's kind of like what I like to do to actually being part of your day job. Yeah, for sure. That's a win. But it is kind of parlaying that. It is, you know, using those passions like improv, like these other things. Like the guy I worked with who was a bartender who just had the gift of the gab, could talk to people, leverage that to being able to recruit people and understand and sales and all that stuff too. Sales is, like I always say, is one of the hardest jobs. But it's that, right? They have a thirst. They love reading, right? Is that great? Then, you know, maybe that's whatever their passions are. Right. My mind's drawing a blank on passions. So, you know, but it's, you know, but true passions end up spending more money on them than they make the money. So, and there's nothing wrong with a side hustle. There's nothing wrong with a side hustle. Like, how many people I know that are professionals, even doctors and nurses that we work with, that have an Etsy store. That's what they're passionate about, right? That's okay. But it's not their day hustle, right? So, and I think that's, you know, through the pandemic, like, we saw a lot of people that their side hustle, like, they started doing it, or their passions turn into side hustles. Mm-hmm. If you can transition your side hustle into your main hustle, and that's what you're passionate about, great.
But that's going to take time. And I think also too, managing expectations on that too, because when people do say that, you know, I have to say, like, even with social media, you do see a lot more people pursuing their passions full time because of the world of social media. But I think that what is never discussed is if you do want to do that, manage your expectations kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Because it does take quite a bit of time, you know?
Yeah, it does. And Instagram's all fake. I mean, people their passions are about all these things, right? Who knows what they're actually doing, right? They just happen to be the right place at the right time with the right lighting and right filters.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So, I mean, use your passions for sure. I would say, you know, use them for what you're doing. But if you are in, you know, landscape design, architecture, and you have these passions, you want to pursue them. Yeah. I mean, they're, like I said, so many people nowadays have side hustles. There will be an opportunity, but that's the beauty of, hey, I'm really good at this design. I'm really good at these, you know, this landscape architecture, this design, and I'm good at this, and it's making me money, and I'm happy at the company. There's nothing wrong. You still have that side hustle. It's not, as long as it's not competitive with what you're doing. Right. But there will be a time where you'd be like, you know what, this has legs. I'm gonna go do this. Right. This is gonna be my full time thing now.
Right.
And mm-hmm. and you'll know that jumping off point.
Right.
And it is a little bit of a look before you leap, but you'll kind of know if you kind of have that Etsy store to be like, hey, this is really picking up. Mm-hmm. Like, I am too busy with my Etsy store to do my work. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have like that thing and be like, okay, I can survive on this. And if I keep doing this, then you can transition. You know, so there definitely is ways to do it, but I think it's the exception, not the rule. I think it's very hard to kind of take your passions and I think the biggest area of success, I think, is people that take their passions and use them for their day job, whether it's being analytical, reading a lot, or being more improv, you know, or whatever it is that they're more engaging and fun and can think on their feet and quick reacting.
In most cases, or maybe I shouldn't say most cases, but in some cases, you'll start off in a career, you know, I'll even use me as an example again, is that starting off in landscape architecture, going for 5 years in this and getting a master's degree and loving it and being like, yes, this is the best thing ever. And like, oh my God, I'm gonna be so happy. Like, I'm gonna be a landscape architect. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm not gonna say it. Those things are never gonna happen. But at the same time, like, you started it and you're like, oh my God, this is so different than what I thought it was. Like, this is way different.
Right.
What happens to that person? Like, what happens to that person who was like, oh my God, like, I've been doing this for 2 years, 3 years. This is not what I thought it was. But I have these passions, I have these skills, and they don't fit in necessarily with this job description. How can I go and look for something that fits my passions, that fits my skills, and be able to make good money? You know, kind of finding that is, you know, it's difficult.
Yeah, it's not easy, but you do have to, you kind of said it, like, you have to spend a little time on Indeed, like, find jobs, like, that are out there. Do those jobs exist?
Right.
When you first enrolled in school, or every year you enrolled afterwards, say, I'm coming back for another year to go do this, what did that job look like? What did you want to do? And, you know, and that's very big. And see, what kind of job is it? Is it this company that sucks? My boss that sucks? Is it, you know, or whatever it is? Or is it, you know, I thought it'd be a little different. I thought I'd be designing, you know, landscape architecture for, you know, Disney's, you know, Wild Animal Kingdom. And it's like the best, you know, there's one place in the world that kind of, you know, is the best of the best, you know, like it's that, right? They, you know, the different, you know, plant selection, all that stuff too. And be like, you know what, actually I meant to, well, that's maybe more botany, right? And maybe that's a little different. And, you know, then you maybe have to think about transitioning a little bit more towards that, to be, you know, picking different materials, different, you know. So it is that when you were gung-ho, what were you gung-ho about, right? And and then where do you want to get to? Mm-hmm. So you could be working for a company that may be very good for you, that you know, you're doing the work, you're punching the clock, you're getting your projects done, but it's not really your passion. You have to think about it too. I mean, the company doesn't owe you that to go fulfill your passions. They hired you because they had a need. We need somebody to go do this job. Keep that in mind, right? So, you know, the biggest complaint that the boomers have about the millennials is that they feel entitlement, right? So, like I said, I'm old school enough to kind of see that. Not that I'm a boomer. At least my kids call me a boomer, but anyway. But I'm new school enough to kind of see the other side, to be like, it's not what I want to be doing. That's okay. But the company has a need. They don't just hire people just to hire people. Like, they had to fulfill a need. They need this type of person. They want to grow them into this role. Maybe they have like an older aging population that they need to start grooming the newer grads, or maybe that 5-10 years experience that, hey, they need to move into senior leadership roles in the next 5-10 years because everyone else is going to be retiring. That's a big risk for a company, right? If you have that whole level kind of retiring. So it's where did that passion come from? Where did that drive? Like, what did the job look like? What did you think you were signing up for? And then go search on Indeed to see if that job exists. Forget about the city. Forget about it. Like, just open up all the parameters and just type in some keywords and see what you get.
I like that.
Or search websites, see like, are there companies that do this? Yes, no, great. Like, and you know what? There's nothing wrong with going on Indeed, and let's say it's whatever landscape architecture firm that does, or you know, for example, Toyota moved their global headquarters down the street from our office here in Plano, Texas, from California. Their grounds are beautiful. Maybe they have an in-house type of person, right, that does landscape architecture for them. Like, that's what I want to be going to do. And there's nothing wrong with going on LinkedIn, finding the recruiter for Toyota, sending them a resume preemptively and saying, hey, by the way, you probably don't have a position open, but if you ever do, can you call me? Because like, this is my dream job, right, is to go do this type of landscape design. That's
very
definitely good. Taking initiative, right? So that's my other 2 cents of advice, is don't necessarily wait for a job to pop up online. If you know a place you want to work at, it'll say like future opportunities. You could do that. Connect with the person on LinkedIn. Connect with the recruiter on LinkedIn. Connect with the design manager on LinkedIn. And post cool stuff that you do on LinkedIn. Like, hey, I designed this at home, whatever, like for something. It's like a passion project. Great. Post it. Like, don't bombard people. It's not about, you know, taking pictures of your lunch and I ate this today. Like, that's not it. But it's more like, you know, something relevant in the professional world that you're happy to like advertise, kind of thing. Like, people should see this. Like, it doesn't really go in your portfolio or like on your resume, but like just something cool that happened. Like, that's what you do. You stay relevant with those people. Then when a job opens up, you're like, Gracie, it sounds familiar. Oh yeah, show my LinkedIn. That's what you want. So yeah, that would really be some of the best advice, is go, like, don't be afraid to go after the companies, even if they're laying off. to go after the companies that you think you'd be a great fit for because you love their projects, and just saying to the recruiter, hey, just would you mind keeping my resume handy in case something comes up? That'd be great. And just stay in touch with them and be like, hey, can I check in with you every 3 months, 6 months?
Sure.
That's great.
Especially on LinkedIn.
Yeah, and taking the extra step to do that, I think you're used to just sort of things coming to you, right? Like, you're used to getting a notification of, oh, this is a job description, I have to apply for this. But in reality, you could be taking that step forward and notifying the other person from person to person, really. You know,
keep in mind, companies are always searching for people. They just probably don't post it. Some of them may be confidential searches. Yeah. They also, because A, they may be replacing someone, or B, they don't want to tip off their competitors that they're bidding on a job or they have this job. So good recruiters, that's why I talked about like headhunting and finding, like they will source and find people to call, and sometimes they never even post the job.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah.
Very cool.
Could be out there.
Thank you so much. This was awesome.
Pleasure.
I'm so excited.
Helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. Very helpful. A lot of experience, just a lot of words of wisdom. I think even for me, just talking with you, I think I learned a lot.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it. And, yeah, if anybody has questions, add me on LinkedIn, find me on LinkedIn.
Yes.
And, you know, happy to share some more thoughts. And, you know, now that I'm kind of out of the recruiting world, I think that this is probably, it's probably the most honest I've been about recruiting and kind of how things work on both sides, either in-house or from agency recruiters. And, you know, this is, you know, really, really, it's we're in a weird job market. People are like, there's no jobs out there. And companies feel like there's no people out there, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard. Mainly because it's, you know, they're going into these applicant tracking systems, they just kind of get lost in there. Sometimes if they feel like it's a slower economy, they get bombarded with resumes. You get grocery baggers who are applying for jobs that have no business applying because they're just trying, right? You can't fault someone for trying, but at the same time, so give it a shot. Go leverage your passions. Go see what's out there. But be wary of what's a passion, what's a hobby. But use your passions to your advantage. You know, that's really it. I always hate the question, like, what are your weaknesses? But like, let's talk about my strengths, right? What play your strengths? What am I good at? Right. And what you can bring to the table. And, I think companies do want to hear that you're interested in working for them. That goes a long way.
That's great. Awesome.
Cool.
Thank
you so much for having me.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you.
Nice. We did it.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.